Welcome everybody back to another episode from Tales from the Core. Again, it's Mike Francis, as always, with Neil Falver, the birthday boy. Happy birthday to you, man.
Thank you, man. 29 yep. Today.
And happy Mother's Day. It's Mother's Day also. So to all the mothers and then all the motherfuckers that made it possible for them to be mothers.
All the animal mothers.
Yeah. We got two guys who literally took the term Hollywood Marine to the next level. We got Freddie Joe Farnsworth and Robert Garcia joining us today again. Feels like we just did this a week ago, didn't it?
Yeah, it was a week ago, wasn't it? 2 weeks ago? Week ago?
It was a week ago yesterday, yeah.
Like deja vu, baby.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was, dude, honestly, I fucked that recording up because I had such a good time. I wanted to do it again. Yeah. And yeah, Scott Gibson, I texted him, told him that you guys were on, and he's like, I can't wait to hear those guys bitch about us whiny actors. So maybe we'll have to relive some of the stories you guys told last week, but maybe even get a couple more just because of that comment.
Yeah.
So for everybody that's listening, because they're not listening to the one we did last week, Freddie Joe, we kind of started off with you and your path and your route, how you got into Hollywood via the Marine Corps, via growing up and being a cowboy in Wyoming.
It was kind of the true Hollywood story, I guess you could call it. I spent almost 10 years in the Marines, and like everybody else, when I decided to get out, I went back home, and like a year and some later, I was drunk as shit with a bunch of buddies, as usual, as most Marines would be. And they had talking shit about a movie, auditioning, looking for former military guys, and of course, you know, being a Marine, I'm the baddest motherfucker that walked the face of the earth. So I'm like, yeah, I'll go with that thing. And of course, they held me to it the next morning, which pissed me off. I had to sit around and wait in line for a couple hours. I was sweating. I was like, this sucks ass. I don't want to do it. And then I can't remember his name, but he was of a different sexual persuasion, if we know what I mean. And he just goes, what are you, an outdoorsman or a military man? And my whole audition was, don't I fucking look like I was a military man? And he goes, oh, okay. Ooh, 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 ooh. Went running off. And next thing you know, I got called back and I met Del Dye. And he was like, oh, shit, you're perfect. And halfway through that movie, that was Starship Troopers, halfway through that, he got a Western and goes, I don't know shit about horses. And so the money was good, and now we're here 27 years later.
That's amazing, man. Yes. Dude, he was in Starship Troopers. I was like sitting at home beating off to that shower scene, you know, like the dudes, of course, like, you know.
Yeah. 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 Jake Fusey has such a nice ass.
Yeah. 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 No, it's awesome, man. Like, it's so cool. You know, we're always on here talking to our boys about, and whoever, when we got dudes in Japan, Jamaica, I don't know, people are everywhere listening to this thing, but you know, you go from serving to kind of like a drunk bet to, you know, now you've been had like a very, very big roles and helping prepare people, helping prepare actors for roles in series like The Band of Brothers, The Pacific. And yeah, you know, there's almost like this mindset we have. I don't know if you guys have. I think we all equally came from like very humble beginnings, where when you look at people that are doing great things and being successful, you think like, now that can never be me. It's just not in the cards. Right. Mm-hmm. And sometimes even as a Marine, they get out and they get back into that civilian, like the civilian shit starts to crawl back in their head and they get trapped and they don't think that they can go on to do really, really awesome shit.
Yeah. You know, that happens a lot of people, you know, especially like in the Marines, like you bust your ass and you're doing stuff and the quotas aren't there. You're not getting promoted. You're just like, man, how the hell did that guy get to be a staff sergeant? He's an idiot, you know, but it's just like in the core of the civilian world. You just got to keep your head down and go. And you always remember, if that fucking dude can climb that mountain, so can you. You know, don't ever let nobody climb a mountain you can't. That's the way I always looked at it. So fuck them.
And then a beautiful thing about it, you know, is Garcia, you ended up getting with Freddie Joe.
Yeah, man. I actually met him on set of the TV show, The Unit. He had come in because he doubled Max Martini at the time. And he stopped in, but he had already a following of military guys at that time. And they knew him from the Band of Brothers. Like, oh, that's a guy from Band of Brothers. He trained the guys and all this shit. So they pretty much said that they were going to have something coming up that might be a sister piece, but nobody knew roughly what it was. And everybody just tried to huddle around them and do the school circle and like, oh, Freddie Joe. I was like, and at that time, when I came, at that time, I had been back already from Iraq and I already, like, and I had a chip on my shoulder already. So I was like, man, fuck everybody. Like, I really didn't care. I was like, eh. And I didn't, and Freddie Joe will tell you this, a lot of this industry revolves around a lot of people being fake and brown nosing and just trying to get in where they can get in. And for me, that's one of the things that I'm like, fuck that. I'm not going to be one of those guys. So I'm like, hey, good luck to that dude. Fuck him. And I ended up just moving on. And I ended up actually working on, I think, on another project that I was working with that group. And I, the more I got to talk to
September's
him.
Ends. When yep. September ends. When September ends.
The music Green Day video. And I got to talk to him more. And he was more actually down to earth. And I found out that he was actually one of the few combat veterans that was actually in the industry, because there wasn't that many. And at that time, and I was like, oh, okay, cool, man. And I don't know, man. We just kind of gelled together. And I started learning more from him, just from being on set to just getting introduced to Camp Diet to actually partaking in on the miniseries of Pacific. And then from then, it kind of wrote itself, because like I think it just became like I got stuck at his hip. So I was like, hey, man, I want to learn more. Like, all right, what do you got? So that, and he was like, I think at that time, he had a ranch up by Springville, which is north of Bakersfield, and he had horses and stuff like that. I'm like, hey, man, I'm like, I want to learn about horses. And he got me on the horse. I was freaking scared shitless on it. And like, what is it? Like, what'd you say? Monkey fucking a football?
Yeah, you look like a monkey fucking a football for sure.
I was like, yeah, because, you know, and I was like,
well tanned monkey.
I'm like, I'll get around to it. But yeah, no, man. We like his friendship and just both on and off the industry. It's been a cool, to me personally, it's been something that I cherished over the years, because you don't find a lot of people, especially in this industry, and then especially in the Marines, that you just bond with. And I don't know, he just became one of my brothers. I came from a small family, so he blended in just fine.
Yeah, you know, the film industry is funny too. You know, I Robert will tell you, when we went to the Pacific, one of the first things, you know, I had Sean Bunch, who was in Anglico. I had my best friend, Bruce Whitfield, who was in the Marines at the time, yes. Mortarman. He did quite a few tours all over the place. You know, we had Major Schuster, who was kind of a major, so he didn't really fucking know how to do it very well, but he tried. Good dude, man. Good dude. Just tried too hard. You know how officers are. Who else did I have, Robert, that was military? And of course I had Robert Garcia, you know, LARs and stuff. So I remember that we were all lined up, because they were just like, we don't know what to do. You know, they got the uniforms all pressed out, the World War II uniforms. Me and Bruce got the campaign covers on. Everybody's got their covers all starched up, and here come the buses full of the actors and the background performers. And they're like, I mean, what do we do? How far can we push this? I mean, what can we do? I said, I'll tell you what you do. Just follow my lead. And that's as far as you can go, because you will not be able to go to the top of me. And they were like, okay. So the very first, the buses pulled up, and I could see them all looking, all these Aussie kids and kids from all over. There's a bunch of backpackers they had that came in from all over the world. And they were just laughing at us in our World War II uniforms. And So I was just sitting there looking at them, laughing, pointing out which ones. And I always find my bitch, you know, being a troop handler and instructor at MCT for almost 4 years. I was like, I'm going to find my bitch to make my point. And I get on, and I do believe it's this guy by the name of Glenn Ellis. He's a really good dude, really good special ability, really good. In fact, I think he directs now. I get on, and everybody's like really quiet, but he's still, yeah, mate, yeah, just looking at his thing, staring at us and stuff. And I just sat there and stared at him until finally he looked at me. He goes, yeah, mate. And I go, you done? Are you fucking done? He goes, am I done with what? Beat the fuck up, boss. Get the fuck off the bus. I grabbed the bikes. I threw the bike through the fucking window. Fucking yeah. Everything. I just started screaming, and then all the guys are just like, oh, yeah. Get out of the bucket, but. Yes. Oh, it was so funny. And all the wardrobe and hair, you know, they'd been telling me all day, oh, it's going to take us 6 hours to do this, and it's going to take us 5 hours to do wardrobe. And I said, here, hold my beer. And like 3 hours later, they were wardrobe, they were haircut, they were ready to roll, ready to get back on the bus and go to fucking boot camp. Yeah, it was great. Instantly, I started breaking them into squads, into platoons, into units, into everything. Started giving them nicknames. You know, some of them still go by their nicknames. Bitch Eyes, Queenie. They just name them. They still go by them. Crazy Eyes, all of them. Yeah, it was great. And that was Robert's first introduction to how I do a boot camp from film.
Yeah.
You know, right. And it's the same way. You know, it's the same. We have the same philosophy. You know, one thing Dale did a long time ago, we do it differently, me and him, of course, but his philosophy is still the same. I spend 2-3 days just, there's no right answer. I don't care who they are. They could be Brad Pitt, they could be anybody. There's just no right answer. And it's no sleep. It's just fuck with them until all of a sudden their brains start shutting down. And we all know it. We see it. Their brains shutting down. They don't give a fuck no more. Just don't yell at me. I don't care. I'll play follow the leader and do whatever. And then we start molding them into their characters from that point on. So a little bit less, maybe a little bit of practical joke every once in a while. Maybe let them see me smile instead of being a dick all the time. You know, just like our drill instructors did in boot camp. And then by the time they're ready to graduate, they're pretty much on autopilot, you know? I've done really good ones in 5 days, and I've done them for friggin' 3 weeks. They all get the same treatment.
You brought up something that I actually never really even thought about before. I got two things. One, don't let me forget, because I forgot last time I wanted to talk about when people, you know, like, portray the enemy. Right. Mm. We talked a little bit about Lewis and that role in Homeland. Thank you. Garcia's fucking scribe. But yeah, so I was wanting to ask about the people that play characters from Japan. Well,
yeah.
Well, don't let me forget that. Because I want to ask this next one before that happens is, so you guys, you know, because we just think about you getting, we got to turn these guys into Marines, or we got to turn them into whatever, right? Soldiers. But your job is beyond that, because your job is, I've got to turn this little midget Josh Bataan into fucking JP Morgan.
Mm.
How much research and kind of studying and preparation do you guys do to actually turn to help prepare that person via boot camp for that specific role? I love you, Josh, by the way.
That's a real good question. You know, now someone like Captain Dye will research, he'll read every book, he'll do everything, and that doesn't do anything to me but screw me up. So what I do is I do little bit of research on each one of them, and then I'll read the script, and the script and the little research will start telling me which way their character goes. And a lot of times, majority of the time, Band of Brothers and the Pacific, these guys had time to learn their characters, learn the personal things about their characters, stuff that I couldn't even get to. So I kind of try to stay away from overly researching, because then I start really fucking with the way they're doing their character, and then they start doing their character how I want them to do it. All the guys are very, very talented. You know, and they're there for a reason, because there's something in them that sparked the casting and the producers that, hey, this is our research. This is the guy that we kind of see him being. So I try not to overly do it because I want them to have all those personal traits of JP Morgan. But what I'll do is if they're an officer, I'll make them learn like an officer. If they're if they're supposed to be a shitty officer, then I won't give them the answers. If they're supposed to be a great leader, I'll kind of cheat and give them some of the answers. So all the guys will start following them. You know, if they're a good NCO, you know, if they're Bacillon or stuff, he gets a little extra pull aside time to say, oh yeah, you know, out here in boot camp, if you know somebody was enveloping me, I would set a base of fire, you know, I would whatever, you know, if I wanted to set an envelopment, I got ambushed, I'd set a base of fire, maybe envelop left around this little hill right here. You know, that would be me. And then, oh wow, 2 minutes later we get, you know, ambushed and we got to envelop left around the little hill. And he's the one doing it. So then all the actors start going, holy shit, how did he get that so fast? Cause I had no idea what they were talking about. I had none whatsoever, but he got it. And so then all of a sudden he becomes that leader. Just that one little bitty thing starts making them go, oh, well, you know, this other guy's a platoon sergeant, but this guy always does the right thing. That guy's always doing the wrong thing, man. Fuck him. They do that in real life. And then all of a sudden it turns around and it just so happens their characters are the same way. Sobel gets, you know, if I was you, I'd go out there and scream at everybody right now because they fucked and didn't have their boots on right. And the guys are all exhausted and tired. Here's Sobel screaming at him because I tell him I'm about to kill him. And then he's screaming at everybody. Then I have winners come through and say, yeah, all right, guys, don't worry about it. Just go over there and do your thing. You know, it's all no big deal. So now all of a sudden they're like, why is he being a dick? You know, you know what I mean? And it just kind of all the different role playing starts. Those are things that I'll start doing. But, you know, I don't want, even though they all, when I first meet them, think I hate every one of them. This is the coolest thing on the planet. It's just like a good troop handler or a good drill instructor. You know, I want them all to believe that I hate their guts immensely, that I would rather see them dead on the side of the hill than help them. And by the time I get done, I'm their greatest confidant. I'm the guy they come to and say, hey man, I got this problem or I got this question and can you answer it for me? You know, and that's that whole routine and rotation of their mind is what we look for. Robert's the same way. He's got guys now that he had in his platoon that just, you know, we'll call him and ask him what color shirt they should wear. And that's what, you know, that's what we want. But when they first met us, they thought we were the biggest pricks and there was just nothing about us. You know, it's like all of us had that leader, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hopefully that answered your question in a long way.
Yeah, yeah, because, I mean, you did touch on it, you know, with Winters and Sobel. You were talking last week. You know, we can't remember everything, but I'm glad that you brought up the throwing the bike because that was fucking hilarious. So I'm glad you brought that back up again. But, yeah, 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 absolutely. I just wanted you to kind of touch on those points again and share how you did those little things. To help them with how they're going to be and interact. Just kind of tell that story again.
You could look at like the film I'm doing now. It's a Vietnam film. And I literally had 4 hours to train them. So from the moment I walked in, I introduced myself to them all in the production office. And I just basically called them all idiots and retards. Excuse me, I shouldn't use that word retard, but all idiots and brainless, you know, spine. But then I also told them, you know, I'm not here, you know, because they were, my character, I think he's an atheist. My character, I think, and they got down with their little talking. And I just said, I don't give a fuck. You're all going to look like you were freaking, long range reconnaissance platoon squad team out here when I get done with you. That's all I give a shit about. And they were just like, what? And so I had 4 hours to start training them, and all that was mainly weapons. Getting them to move with the weapons, holding the weapons, how to hold the weapon, trying not to too modernize it, but then yet, you know, put their special operating group. So I was kind of having, let them play around with it a little bit. And then every day, constantly, as soon as we get in, you know, and where I really won them on this one is just the same way you would or same way any other Marine would. And, you know, we were exhausted. It's 5 o'clock in the morning. It's pissing down rain. We got 6 inches of mud clay on our feet. So our feet weigh 15 pounds extra each one. And they're just like, man, do this. And what do? I come through talking about naked Tyrannosaurus Rex dinosaur and start laughing about him fucking some, you know, making little baby fucking Barney dinosaurs and shit. And then start talking about how much corn was in my shit this morning. And they're just like, what the fuck is this? And from that point on, I owned them. They were just like, this dude is fucking nuts, but he's hilarious. And all of a sudden it was wrapped. They were off. They weren't tired no more. They were like, how the fuck did he do that? Now it was just another different way of getting into their mind and their hearts and souls, you know? None of them would do anything. Robert was out here for a little while. They wouldn't do, they would not even look close to the camera unless they go, Hey, Freddie Joe, should I look like this? So once you get them, you got them. And, it was kind of cool. He just got to watch like 7 minutes of it. And man, there's a lot of Aussies that didn't want me here, but they're all my buddies now after watching that 7 minute trailer. They're like, holy shit, this looks legit. Like, there you go. That's why we're here.
Yeah, that's cool as shit.
That's the magic. That's the magic, man. And
every one of you guys could do it. That's what I tell everybody. Everyone could do it. You know, the film industry. Well, I let me take that back. Not everybody can do it. Not everybody's a born instructor, born troop handler, or born, you know, leader. Not everyone is. But if you know, I'm really good. There's one thing I had a great platoon sergeant years ago. His name was Sergeant Justice, squad leader, and then kind of my platoon sergeant. His name was Sergeant Justice. And he taught me how to learn. And I've told this to Garcia before. You know, I didn't really understand what I was doing, you know, five paragraph order, all this stuff. But he taught me how to really learn what those things mean and how to break them down and how to put them into everyday life, including, you know, it's not just patrols or raids or whatever the hell you're doing. And that has kind of followed me all the way forward now. So what I do is I try to learn everything about this business I can learn, like camera lenses, you know, lighting, everything to do about it. And then I also learn about the editing and the writing and the focusing and the directing and all that stuff. So that helps me as well in the job, you know. And I tell everybody that works for me from time to time, I said, the only reason why I'm good at this is because I can go to a cameraman, look at what he's filming, take 2 seconds to move just an elbow 3 inches, and now they got the perfect shot. They got the perfect shot. And if I didn't learn the businesses and I didn't know what the business was about or how it is, you know, a lot of times this is military people. We just come in and say, fuck it. It's like the Marine Corps. Everything got to be the Marine. You got to do it like that. Well, it's not. It's not the Marine Corps. You know, I did a statement a long time ago where everybody was asking me about Dale Dye and everything. And I said, look, I'm not going to combat with Captain Dye. I'm never going to combat with this man. I said, but is there a better movie maker than him? So I'm going to learn everything I can from him. You know, when you got a resume that just has platoon and Saving Private Ryan, and you don't have to say anything else, you're a pretty good filmmaker. So I don't give a shit what he did in the military. I don't give a shit but I know when he makes movies, he's good as it gets. And, I just kind of said, you know, followed what his lead is. He's a good writer and shit. I couldn't, if you don't mind not having any periods and commas and music. Elson, and I'm a great writer and it written in crayon, but besides that, I followed his lead on learning the camera, learning, you know, what the whole business, what are the props, what is their job, what's the armors, what's their job, what's the wardrobe, what's their job. That way now, instead of fighting them, I'm helping them out on set. I'm making their life so much easier. As Robert knows, when I get out here, only half of the people here, the wardrobe, love me because they've worked with me a couple times, you know. But the rest of them are like, oh, what are you doing here? Oh, AD's like, oh, we don't need you stunts, we don't need him, we know everything. And then the very first two tactical things come up and the stunts are out there trying to look at us, we'll show you how to do it. And then I walk up, go, no, that's completely fucked up. This is how you do it. This, you know, change this around. Yeah, that would be great if you wanted to shoot each other in the fucking face, you know, and then you move things around and then they see the product and then they're like, oh shit, we really didn't know what the fuck we were talking about. And, you know, everything just starts smoother. The actors get into a routine every morning. They come in, they go straight to get dressed, then they go straight to eat chow, then they go straight to the armory, and then they're straight there waiting to go wherever we go. That's not how it normally works. Rob will tell you, go on a set, your actors are fucking off, they're overdoing this, some of them are not getting dressed, some of them are passed out in their trailers, some of them are getting stoned in their trailer. Want to be there. Yeah. Yeah. So, but when we do it, they just get a routine every day, just like you do in the military. Works really well.
No, I do. I think that's like one of the reasons I said before that I got along really well with Freddie Joe at the very beginning was because of that. Like and you guys know this, as far as in the Marine Corps, you don't only just have one job. You have multiple jobs but you have one job that they categorize you for. But once you get to your unit, you're supposed to know everybody else's job just for shits and giggles, then in case something goes down. And I think once I first got into the business, I was just looking at everybody, what everything did. And then once I came across Freddie Joe and Captain Die, and I started seeing, they're like, hey, stop messing around over there. Look here. This is what you need. Because everybody's so concerned, like, for modern times, as far as, like, having that the guys are, like, walking in a perfect line. But in on the actual teleprompter, you're only seeing a small space because the lens is so tight on the characters. Everything else is, like, useless. So a lot of guys go to, like, try to throw up a bunch of fights and everything for everything in the foreground, but they're never going to see that. And all it is, like Trey just mentioned, is, like, knowing what everybody's role is, knowing the cameraman, the first AD and everybody, and looking at what is fucked up and what is, like, what can be fixed and not saying anything about it, just fixing it and making everything go so much smoother. Like when he ended up mentioning, hey, they're like, oh, we're going to expect there's going to be a full day event. They're like, all right, we'll get it done. He won't tell them what time, but he's like, we'll get it done. And then brrr, like the chopping block begins and everybody goes through the freaking gauntlet. And they're like, all right, we're done in 3 hours. What else do you need? They're like, oh my God, but like this is not going to, like, oh, okay, well, great, thanks. And they just keep looking for answers and answers. And, you know, and I think like Fredro had mentioned, it's having the right mindset not to get too fucked up beyond yourself. Because a lot of guys, when they come off the military, they'll be like, well, I'm the biggest fucking swinging dick walking around here. You're going to listen to me. And which is why some movies become really shitty, because the guys walk in and they're like, yeah, man, this is my fucking resume. I've done this, this, and that. You're like, all right, what can you actually do on set for us? Nothing. All right, then get this fucker out of here. And everybody will start jumping in. But like he was saying, that you'll get people that are prior military or their cousin, uncle's daddy, grandpa went somewhere, did some engagement. And like, well, it's supposed to be done like this. You're like, what is your job again? Oh, my job. Okay, shut the fuck and go be. They hired me to be a tech advisor. Let me tech advise. Get the fuck out. And then, like, he streamlines a bunch of shit. So I also learned, like, from him and Captain Dye, when to just know and pick your battles and what actually makes sense and what doesn't make sense. You know, because sometimes you might just be wasting your breath with somebody that is not important. You're like, all right, cool. Thank you. Have a great day. Hey, this is the way we're going to do it now. Hey, pay attention. Mm. And then you just move on and just get stuff done. But yeah, it's not everybody can be a tech advisor. So
yeah,
that's my point.
That's a fact.
Yeah. But you,
I mean, I've known a lot of guys that were amazing, probably great, incredible Marines, but they come in and they're the cousin of one of the assistant directors or the producer, and yeah, I did 10 tours, and of course everybody's a super ninja. When they were in the Marines, they were super ninjas, and you know, they were Navy SEAL, or they were
special forces.
Every one of them are, you know, because they don't want to tell their family members they were a cook or nothing, but it doesn't matter. I mean, a cook can be a good military tech advisor as long as they have the basics of it now. But the problem is they come in and they do a show, and they do the show with Brad Pitt. And Brad Pitt is like, you know, he's bigger than life sometimes when you see him. You know, he's a handsome, gorgeous man. Everybody around him, he's really cool. He's really nice. But then they start, well, hey, we got to make Brad Pitt look good. And Brad, Brad. But what they forget about is the other 10 cast members and the other 50 background performers. So Brad is looking great, but the movie comes out like shit because everything else looks like shit. You know, it's another thing I teach, I really teach in every show I go on, is attention to detail, even with the deep background. And as you were talking about earlier, attention to detail to the enemies that we're also fighting in these shows. It's very important that you get all of those things right, because you could build the great one character, but if everything around him looks like shit, it's just a shitty fucking movie.
Yeah.
Perfect segue point. Speaking of the enemies, right? Perfectly done there, Mr. Farnsworth.
Yeah.
So these guys, you know, people that come in and portray, you know, the axis of evil, or, you know, just the Empire of Japan, Nazi Germany. it's got to be fucking weird, right? Like, it'd be like me going and portraying a slave owner or something, you know, like that's kind of part of your dark history. You know, it's not something that probably necessarily everybody's cut out for. What's their feelings on stuff like that?
Well, the Japanese are different than anybody else. They are still a very prideful people. And we have I have a couple guys I want. Yuki and Yataka are the two Japanese I use on every Japanese show or thing. And Yataka is he's a very famous Japanese actor in Japan, but he's also a sword master. And Yataka's like, even though he can be mean, he's just like a middle school teacher, but he speaks perfect English. When you talk to him, you're like, what the fuck? You know, he's like, what the hell? What's going on? But they all speak Japanese, but they're also both, they know the real history of it. Cause you know, Japan, they like to erase a lot of their history. They didn't, you know, but they know the real history. So when we, and we, there's also a Marine, can't remember his name, Mark, right?
Yes, Kirk.
And he speaks fluent Chinese and Japanese. And he's a, you know, white Marine, just like I am, former Marine. And, so he's pretty cool. So what we do is when they come together, like say on the Pacific, Yuki and Yataka, we're all speaking Japanese to all these background performers that came in from, most of them came in over here from Japan just to come to be on the show. Really good dudes. But I mean, they went to town on them. And for like the first day, all they were doing was talking shit about the white guy who was in charge. Cause the white guy would tell Yuki and Yataka something in English. And then they would turn around and speak Japanese. But all for the first 24 hours, they were talking shit in Japanese to him and didn't know he spoke fluent Japanese. Like fluent, like some of the Japanese guys were like, I can't even speak it that fast. Holy shit. And then after the first day, Yataka pulled his sword out and then he came and started screaming Japanese at him. And Yataka was threatening to cut their heads off and shit. Boot camp was nuts, man. So they were legit. Like, I mean, they were sleeping in their little diapers, whatever you call those things. It was crazy, man. Their boot camp, you know, all of our guys can bitch. Their boot camp was legit. Sleeping under the stars. There was no tents, no shelter. They made their own food. There was no MREs. They made all their own food, which kind of fucked with our guys because they could smell it. And they were like, what the fuck's going on? And it always cracks me up because they did their first like day three, I believe it was.
Yeah. That's correct.
And it really put everything into these guys' heads. We're like, because it scared the shit out of them. You know, because it's almost like looking at ghosts. And then, so those guys went legit. And then when we did the Band of Brothers boot camp, we did a 7-day or 6-day of the most of the Germans, all the special ability Germans, background performers, and some of the, you know, main featured people. And we just basically put them through a German boot camp. There's one thing I always say, and Robert's heard me say this before, is it would be one of the biggest disrespectful things I could do as a technical advisor is to make the enemy look weak. Because that would mean that my grandfather, who had 3 Purple Hearts and he had 2 Bronze Star and a Silver Star, just fought a little weak individual, and all those wounds and shit was because he was an idiot. And you know, so I like to show that the enemy is just as strong as we are, because you know, it doesn't do us any good. You know, I hate films when they make it look like, you know, it's a bunch of guys running around in pajamas, you know, and then all of a sudden people are getting killed. You're like, well, that doesn't make any sense. I like it when they show that the enemy is strong and they have their own will, whatever that may be. So then it becomes the difference between right and wrong. You know, we're fighting between right and wrong, and our will is just a little bit more than theirs. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, no, I absolutely. And that's spot on about making sure they're not portrayed weak. Cause I mean, yeah, we joke about going to Afghanistan, find a bunch of goat fuckers, but you know, truth be told, right?
They will fuck you up.
I mean, the Russians couldn't, like, we did some time in Salerno, the Kaust Bowl, right? Yeah. And we learned the history of the Mujahideen, you know, like, yeah. And they would get up there and they would piss all around their machine guns on these, on these mountaintops. So whenever they started lighting up the fucking Soviets, no dust was popping up, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're clever. They're clever fucking people. And no one has ever occupied, like, they're fucking tough. And they are running around in pajamas. Like, pajamas and sandals. Like,
no, I think that's, for me, like, I think for Fredo, when we did the Pacific, he had done shit, man. He had done a bunch of high profile shit already. And for me, I was trying not to fuck that job up because that was like the biggest profile thing that I've had ever that I came across other than like other little stuff. But even on that one, I think the biggest pressure for me was not fucking it up for the Marine Corps, which I, in my mind, I always thought the same thing, like, oh, man. And I always told the guys, and when I saw the Japanese guys do their boot camp, I'm like, fuck, I'm like, all right, we definitely got to put pressure on these guys to make sure they get everything right on their part, because now they're representing the Marine Corps in some way, shape, or form. They didn't sign up, but they signed up for the characters to do this portrayal of them. So we had to do our best foot forward to just make sure that they got it right. And for me, that was like my biggest thing. Like, we grew up with, when we went through boot camp, they give you all the Marine Corps history and how the Japanese were in World War One and this, like, everything in its entirety. So you're trying to take all that in. You're like, all right, don't fuck it up. Don't fuck it up. You know, and then just going into the stuff from the guys that I served with in Iraq, I'm like, all right, I can't fuck that up, because if these guys find out that I did it, then I'm be that motherfucker that fucked it up. You know, but... Well,
and you made a really great point last week. You were talking about like all the movies that show Marines as just being like these fucking psychopaths and stuff. I mean, there was like, you know, Full Metal. We are, yeah. I mean, they're not inaccurate, but like, you know, I mean, there's some really cool ones. but you made a really great comment last week about, you know, with all of these different movies that happen, and then having the opportunity to be part of something so positive, right? Yeah. So positive in the Marine Corps history. And how much that meant to you, you know, having the opportunity to be in there and represent the Marine Corps still, you know, even after your time in active duty.
Yeah. No, but that's what I kept on saying. When I found out about this project and I had met Freddie Joe, and like the impact that he did on all those guys of Band of Brothers, and the impact that Band of Brothers did on a lot of military service members, that for them, whether it was Marines, Army, Air Force, Navy, whatever, it was like, oh fuck, man, Band of Brothers, that's like, that's a shit, even though it's not my branch, but like, that's a shit. But that's the, and I guess an homage to the type of work and the quality that he can do, that I'm like, fuck, I want to learn that shit. I want to be able to do that with whatever I know. And the more I met Fred Joe, was like, well, you can do it too, which is what he said at the beginning of the interview, right? I was like, anybody can, you can do it too, but you just have to learn. And you have to understand what your part is and how you're supposed to do what you need to do to make sure that the mission is accomplished or the job that needs to get done. And I think just when we became, as far as the Pacific, I was like, shit, man, if this is the only positive thing that we can get out of the Marines, I'm like, as far as TV is concerned, I'm like, I want to be in it. I'm like, I'll do whatever I need to do, but like, let's get in it. And yeah, man, because like, who doesn't want to be part, I guess, to some extent of history, whether it comes to the film industry or in real life, to just be able to portray or at least put on the uniform that those guys did back in that time and just freaking slug it out.
Yeah. Why didn't Tarawa make the Pacific?
Hey, Joe.
Well, this is a sixth Marines question here.
That was above my echelon. That's really
just
department. That's above my
spot. That has not necessarily me. My department necessarily, but it's...
No. I'll say you would know more about it than I would.
Yeah, we got to figure there's so many different islands in the island hopping campaign. You can't cover them all. Tarawa was a huge event, especially for most Marines in our history. But the characters that were decided to portray in the Pacific, it wasn't as big of a deal as, you know, Pavuvu and Guadalcanal and Okinawa and so on and so forth. you know, so they had to make a decision. I mean, there was only 10-part miniseries instead of a 20-part miniseries or 30-part miniseries, yeah. You know, which we would have all loved. And one of the main problems with the Pacific was it already, you know, you're talking about the 6th Division, but it already covered almost 4 different divisions at one time. So when you watch Band of Brothers, it followed a company from start to finish, and you watch the Pacific, we got cut up with it about in the middle and followed, you know, 3 or 4 different dudes in 3 or 4 different divisions through the whole thing. So it was really difficult for the audience to follow. So if we would have went even more, it would have been, you know, one of the biggest downfalls for the Pacific that I get all the time is I have to say, go watch it again. Once you watch it the second time or the third time, you'll go, damn, this is bigger than the Band of Brothers. But now that it's huge. Really pay attention to it, it's big. It's the you know, and people didn't realize that basically the Marines did it pretty much almost all by themselves. You know, they had some Aussies to help, some badass Aussie units to help them out. But it wasn't like the European theater where the whole world was there to fight against one enemy. We had, you know, Germans, oh, they were ruthless. They killed 6 million people. The Japanese killed 11 and a half million people, slaughtered them. They were
no prisoners.
They were
and no prisoners.
Exactly.
You know, yeah, I mean, you know, one of the crazy things is everybody, you guys included, did such a fucking phenomenal job with the Pacific that it fucks with me, man. Like, it fucks with me to watch it. And
yeah, there's a little bit of something in there for everybody, you know. Mm-hmm. Anything, even now with modern day stuff, if you can go back and find stuff in the Pacific that you go, fuck, man, I'm feeling the same shit, or that kind of happened to me, or you know what I mean, or you know what I mean, or I seen that, but just different. But of course, you know, and that's the thing about Hollywood too. And Robert, I told them when we started this is, I mean, I've been doing this 27 years now. I've maybe done 5 things with Marines in it. Not counting TV shows, you know, but it's always Army. It's always the big old Army that makes something cool about the Army, or it's a SEAL, you know, Navy SEAL stuff, or, you know, it's hardly ever do I get to, this is going to, you know, and I told Robert and all the other Marines to come, I said, this is our one. This is our chance to introduce the United States Marine Corps to the world. And I think we did, you know. No matter how ugly life was, no matter how ugly things got, no matter how much we tore ourselves down, when those shots rang out, they friggin' put their gear on and did what the hell they had to do. And there's something to be said about that.
Yeah, the shit they went through, and it's crazy because, you know, we all went through shit, right? Like Iraq, we've all gone through shit, but to like look back and just. Like, how the fuck did those guys do it, man? You know?
Exactly.
And
you know, someday in history, 40, 50 years from now, just like World War II, 80 years, someone's going to go, how the fuck did those guys do that in Afghanistan? How in the fuck did they do that? You know, and that's the thing.
The death march. History.
Yeah.
Every episode I bring it up, we'll do a fucking movie on the death march. Because to this day, I don't know how the fuck I did that. Like, I was there.
Yeah.
Hunter's punching the air right now.
You know what I mean? But that's it's always, I tell everybody, you know, it's always the old core, you know, oh, these new guys, you know, these new guys, they don't fucking know what it was like. You guys didn't know what it was like when I was in. I didn't know what it was like when my uncle was in. My uncle didn't know what it was like, you know, it's like, oh, fucking weak motherfuckers. But I always look at it like this. The core is bigger than that. You know, the core is bigger than the old core. It's bigger than the new core. It's bigger than that. There's this year, what is it, 250 years this year? Something like that? Somebody help me out. I'm getting old.
1775.
Yeah, yeah. 249 years?
49.
248. Yeah,
the birthday?
Oh, yeah. 248?
Yeah.
That's, you know, you're getting old when you forget those numbers. But... we got 248 years of experience and knowledge, or 250, whatever the fuck it is. We got 249 years because it's 2024. Because
Neil fucked it up. Yes.
49. Yes.
249 years.
No, clearly, none of us did math for Marines.
Yeah, exactly. But of all the knowledge and history being passed down to these new guys, man. I mean, it's all this history, all the stuff that you did in Afghanistan or Iraq, and all the stuff I did in Desert Storm and all these places, and before me in Vietnam, even Beirut, all those lessons. That's a good thing about the Corps, those keep getting passed on. No matter what the political statements are, I've seen the roller coaster of nothing going on after Vietnam, nothing going on. The Marine Corps is just like turning to fucking weak. And then, you know, you get a commandant like General Gray that comes in that's all about friggin' infantry shit. And let's just build ourselves back in history, you know, turn history back to the way it was. And then, when the shit hits the fan, we're ready and we go, and it's all about put all the money in, get all the training, get the training right, get, you know, all the stuff. And then now we're in a level where everything's going up. We're not in combat anymore. So all that's going to start leaving. Everybody's going to start forgetting. It goes out the window. But again, that roller coaster will come back up to the top, and all those Marines, all that history will come back into play. And the Marine Corps will always be the Marine Corps, no matter what political shit's going on, you know? Yeah. Our job is to locate and close with and destroy, period, end of story, and they'll never change.
Yeah. It was cool. I got to invite – so my first platoon commander, he was prior enlisted, did some recon stuff. He was a reservist because he was doing the officer thing, the college thing also.
The boost.
He took us on a run before our second deployment to Afghanistan. Boots and Utes, flak jacket. He was, you know, was one of those fucking overly moto dudes. And, but amazing dude. And he ran us up Lejeune Boulevard, damn near to the front gate, and then off into the woods and pulled out a letter they received from a Korean Marine that was like there in the shit. And he talked about us. And I got to find. I gotta see if he still has that letter, because I remember that really impacted the shit out of me, because we look back at what those who before us did, especially in the position we're all in, kind of like right now, right? We're in that weird spot. We did the freshest, the newest thing. But then, like Freddie Joe said, there's going to come those Marines after us that go to the next shit. And you know what? We're going to be those guys looking at them like, you know, new core motherfuckers, but like we're proud of them, we support them, you know. Like I remember, I don't know, because you were West Coast, Garcia, right?
Yes.
Well, I don't know. So when we went to Afghanistan and Iraq, we went up through Bangor, Maine, and when we left and when we came home, and there was mainly Vietnam, there was some Desert Storm, but there was vets there, and they lined the walkway when we were coming on and off the planes. And welcoming us back, and you know, the generation before us, they had cell phones so we could call our families because we had to turn our cell phones off and shit, you know, before we deployed. You're right, you're 100% right. Like, it's going to come full circle, and then that warrior past is going to reemerge itself. Absolutely.
Oh, we get it in the movie business. The Band of Brothers guys argue with the Pacific guys all the time. Oh, yeah. You got to see now with the new Masters and Commanders, because they just stayed in a hotel, didn't really do shit. Oh, man, they dogged each other out like a motherfucker. Oh, you don't know what it was like when I did mine. Oh, you don't know what it's like when I did mine. I'm like, Jesus.
That is funny.
Yeah, man, it's always going to be there, but that's what makes it strong and powerful too. You know, if you don't have somebody to challenge you, or something to challenge you, then man, we get complacent. That's the bad thing about Marines. We get complacent as fuck. Yeah. End up on the couch, fat as shit, not giving a damn. Drunk
shit. Well, idle hands, man.
Yeah,
100%.
Well, I think we're
all have to get back in our bitch tent.
Yeah. No, I think we're one of our worst enemies at the same time. I discussed this with Fray Joe before in the past. You'll see other branches kind of like bonding together, regardless if they serve together or not. And they're like, oh man, Army soldier, hey, I got you, dog. And Navy, don't get me started on the Navy SEALs. Those guys, like, they'll freaking bend over backwards, even though they never met them, just to get into one spot or another. But with us as Marines, we're always fighting to try to get it right at the cost of whoever. And it sucks, but at the same time, I enjoy it, because that's what drives me to be good at what the fuck I am, you know? And that's one thing that I love about Freddie Joe is like, hey man, fuck that. We're going to get this shit right because this is the way, this is the shit that we do. We're going to get it right because that's our, that's who we are regardless of whatever the fuck it is. And I think for me, that was one of my biggest thing that I enjoy about being a Marine. Cause I don't even consider myself a former Marine because I look at all these other younger dudes coming in. I'm like, oh man, you're just a kid. And then they start talking about different engagements and theaters of war, you know, and there's guys that were my mentors when I was in the Marine Corps that were in when Freddie Joe was in, giving the guidance of like, hey man, we weren't the shit. And at that time when I was going through training, I was like, the shit. I'm like, yeah, I'm like, that's probably like the big show. I'm like, I don't know if we're ever going to get to that. Fast forward to 2003, like, hey motherfuckers, you got the front row tickets to the Super Bowl. Let's go. We're like, okay, I guess we are doing it, you know? And then those guys become, you look at guys like Freddie Joe, like, hey man, we were there. This is what happened. You got to learn from this and that. And now for us, the same thing that we're doing now, we're trying to pass on the information. But like Freddie Joe, you start seeing the big picture of the lulls going up and down of the time of war and all the money that is being spent to get it right. And then, hey, we're going to focus more on HR and not actual training. And then you go back again to, and the same thing with us in the entertainment industry, you look at guys now, because I became a stuntman because of Freddie Joe. And like the same thing, like, hey man, how do I get in? He goes, oh, well, just go get a fucking job. I'm like, okay. I'm like, well, how? He goes, your military resume will get you a good job. I'm like, okay. And I went and I started doing whatever he told me to start doing. But now at the age that I'm at and doing stunts, I'm looking and seeing guys that are younger than me. And they're like, oh, you're like one of the old guys. I'm like, the fuck? I'm like, how the fuck did I become one of the old guys? But with that, you also have a lot of knowledge, which is why you have to drop a lot of respect to just people that are knowing more about it, you know? And I'm still never old enough to go and Freddie Joe. And there's been jobs in the past. I'm like, hey, FJ, I'm like, how would you go about this? And he'll pretty much school me like, hey, man, this is what you want to do. This is what you want to look for. Okay, cool. Got it. Thanks. And I'll just go and do it and figure it out, because at one point he probably had the same thing. And if we don't understand to learning, to helping each other out and just putting our pride aside, which is a big ass of fucking hill.
Absolutely.
We can get shit done.
Yeah.
It's tough too. It's a dog eat dog business, you know, the film business. Yeah. And you know, one of the older generations, it's like driving wagons, four ups and stuff in the film business. You know, I've done a lot of Westerns and, them old dudes that just, you know, oh no, Freddie Joe can't drive the four up. Oh, he can't drive a wagon. You know, no. Cause they don't want to give up that's their money. They're good at it. That's what they've done for 50 years. And all of a sudden here comes this younger dude. They're like, no. And then all of a sudden you get a chance and they're like, holy shit. You're right. Fucking good. But that's, you know, that's how the whole system, it's one big round robin. Same thing with tech advising. All the old breed, you know, they don't want to send you off to do a movie because they're afraid you're going to do it just as good, if not better, than they did. So then what happens is they start losing that if you go off a director or producer and you really impress them, well, guess what, that's my director and producer now, not yours. So it's always been a fight. And that's one thing I told Robert a long time ago, I'll never do to him like they did to me when I started in this business. If you go off, I want everybody that works for me to go do their own jobs. If that's to me, that's cool. You know what I mean? Yeah. I would rather not work and know Robert got the job than not work and knowing somebody I didn't know got the job. You know, so it's always good. It's a good place to be. Good place to be is to help each other out. There's plenty of work out here. We just gotta, you know, just gotta go and do it. And that's the problem, is especially when like military making movies in the military is just like combat, you know, or just like the real military. Nothing's going on now, so nobody really gives a shit what's going on. You know, films, oh, we don't need a tech advisor. And then you'll have a whole long list of shitty fucking movies that come out. And they spent some great money on, or you'll have a shitty tech advisor, you know, the first time tech advisor. Yeah, I did four turns in Afghanistan, but I don't know shit about making movies. And so they come be your tech advisor and the movie turns out like shit. So then what happens is the movie just spent $150 million, they're going, well, we had a tech advisor and it turned out like shit. Why would we pay for one to come here? Yeah. You know, we're not going to pay for one no more because we, you know, we spent all, wasted all that money. And that then it gets guys like me and Robert, we start having to struggle. That's the only good thing about doing stunts is we can fall back on our stunt side of it. But then you get a movie that comes in like this one I'm doing now is where, you know, the director used to be in wardrobe and he's like, I seen this dude work twice in two different movies. He's doing my movie. And then something spectacular comes out of it and everybody goes, oh, okay, we get it. Yeah. You know, we had all these 7-8 actors came in, they're a bunch of just all over the place, you know, surfing, wearing surfing clothes. One of them's wearing, you know, Jamaican clothes. The other one's wearing all kinds of different clothes. But when they got on camera, they looked like they were tight as shit.
No, but that's another thing that I learned from Freddie Joe as well, and also learned in the business is that you can't be too buddy buddy, man. Like a lot of guys, and Freddie Joe would be a witness to this. That a lot of guys that we met throughout the years, they once they get on a job as a tech advisor, the biggest thing that they want to do is become the top five on the call sheet, their best friend. Like, hey man, let's go hang out, yeah. Let's go do that, let's do that, and then. They forget about what their job is. Their job is to tech advise the fucking project, do what they're supposed to do, fix whatever the fuck needs fixing. But they don't fix it. They become buddy buddy. Film turns out like shit, and they're like, "Hey, we don't need another tech advisor on the next one. Pass on." And then You're like, "What the fuck are they doing that for?" And it just becomes one big shit show. And then we'll get onto a project, like Freddie Joe mentioned before, and like, "All right, hey man, this is the way we're gonna do it. This is the way we're gonna run it." They're like, "For what?" Just pay attention and do it. And then after they do it, they're like, oh, now it makes sense. Why? Like, man, you guys are like fucking masterminds. They're like, no, we just know how to do our job. So,
well, the thing is too, like say when I was doing World War Z, because I did, you know, I trained Brad Pitt on Spy Games and I was pretty hard on him, you know, because it was just me and Brad. So, and I was out in the, you know, so I was just a dick to him. Just all the time, you know, not, you know, shut up. You know what the fuck you're talking about. You know what I mean? It was just straight up military, you know. And like I told you guys, you know, I same with Brad. I can be you, but you can't be me. So you better shut the fuck up and learn. And he was really good at it, you know, and he was really good about paying attention. I got him hooked up with the scout snipers. And so he would contact them once or twice a night, once or twice a week at least. And of course, you know, it was really nice because they were agreeing with everything I was doing with him. And then, which kind of helped me out, but I was a complete dick to him. You know what I mean? Complete dick all the time. And then, you know, once the show started getting done and moved into the Beirut stuff, then we started becoming kind of like friends with one another and stuff, you know, it's like, oh, okay, that guy's not such a dick. Well, fast forward to World War Z. I mean, I got all my guys and Brad walks by. And he just stops, and I hadn't seen him in 10 years, maybe. And he just stops, and he walks up, and he goes, Freddie, shakes my hand. And he looked at everybody, and he goes, remember, I'm a civilian in this one. No yelling at me. And they were all like, oh, and that was their first day of training. I was like, you got it, boss. I got you. Right. And then I just turned around and looked, and they were all like, oh, what? Brad Pitt scared of you? I'm fucked. I am so fucked. Yeah.
Welcome.
But that's what you want, you know. So you want. I treat each and every one of them the same, you know. Every one of them, you know. It's just like Scott Gibson told you guys, you know. He's in boot camp, and I'm like, "Oh, you motherfucker, you're gonna skate a little bit, but I'm gonna add my two cents." You know, you're gonna walk by, and I'm gonna look at you, and I'm gonna just scare the shit out of you. And as you walk by, you know, I'm gonna tell him, "Get back in your bitch tent, bitch." Those things are just. There's something he'll never forget about it because he had to earn my respect. He had to earn the right to call me a friend. Just like, you know, You guys earned that right when you got the Eagle Globe and Anchor to automatically be my friend. But he had to earn that right, period. But the good thing is they all know, no matter how mean I was to him. I mean, I've been fucking mean to him all. I'm sure I've heard some of the stories of the guys on your show. Sometimes I'm like, oh shit, that was kind of hard. But you know, like I told them, you know, you got builders that build homes, they build buildings and they build bridges and all that stuff. You guys haven't built shit. You haven't earned really nothing in your life. But when they get done with the film with me, they fucking earned it. Yeah. You know, they earned. I said, you earned the right now to be a cool dude, to ask a crew member if he wants water while you're getting the water. You earned the right to be polite to people, to show up on time. You earned the right to you know, just be nice to everybody, not be a fucking dick actor or whatever, you know, whatever book you read that said you should be a dick. You've earned the right to say, man, you guys don't fucking know. You don't know. You don't know what it's like to be freezing ass fucking cold and just sitting there and some dude talking about having sex with a rhinoceros or something. You don't know what it's like.
You know, there's part of me that kind of wish like I knew Scott before the Pacific. Because, you know, since like it's us just through the podcast, like it's crazy, like how close we've gotten. And, you know, we're trying to work on some things together to help World War II vets out and do a golf fundraiser down here in November. And that fucking guy, man, I tell you what, like, he's just an incredible dude. And the experience he had, you know, I know that it had just a profound effect on him, which is incredible to see. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's just like the nicest damn guy. Sometimes he's too nice, you know, cause like I'll text him and be like, hey, we just had, you know, just talk with Freddie Joe and Garcia. Awesome dudes. Thanks for, you know, cause really like this little path that we started did start with him. And, yeah. And he's like, yeah, he's like, they're great guys. Can't wait to hear him, you know, bitch about us whiny actors. You know, and then he throws in, he's like, you know, he's like, you're doing great things. I'm very fortunate to like to know you and be your friend. And I'm just gonna be like, shut the fuck up. This isn't a battle like who can compliment, who can suck whose dick off better here. You know?
Well, he's Canadian.
That's what I was gonna say. You moved to it.
Dude, we were texting the other night and I was teaching him about the Mark 19 because we were talking about weapons. And so he doesn't know what the fuck a Mark 19 is. And I told him when we were cross training doing 31 shit, I said, dude, it's the coolest thing ever because you just get behind it and just doom, 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 doom. And you can just see the rounds flying through the air. And then you just, woo, you know, I said, but like in your case, since you're Canadian, you guys would get up behind it and be like, doom, 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 doom. Hey, sorry. Like fucking
behind the geese. Not even that behind the geese.
He sent me a video. I don't know. He's like, is this the thing? And I'm like, yep, that's the fucking thing, man. Like, that's it. I reached out to my old lieutenant, who's a lieutenant colonel now. He's out there. He's going to the first MEF in June. Mm. And I said, hey, let's do an event where we get a lot of like the guys that were with the Pacific, with band. You know, let's get guys like any World War II vets or even maybe like Korean Nam vets together. And let's have like a, you know, like a Jane Wayne day. Ultimately, we never got to do those when I was in because our fucking op tempo was so high. You know, we were gone 7 months, back 7 months, gone 7 months, back 7 months. And so he said when he gets to the first MEF in June, he's going to work on putting something together for us. And all of us getting out there in Pendleton and just sending some motherfucking rounds down range. Try to get Scott behind one of those Mark 19s.
Yeah, go out to range 314, man.
Yeah.
Right there, MCT.
That's where the real range train, by the way, guys.
Yeah.
I was out in Abilene. Well, you guys know, last week I was in Texas and we were grabbing some barbecue. And the guy I was with, though, he was my platoon sergeant's section leader with 7th Marines back in the 90s. And I guess some civilian dude saw a Marine Corps shirt or something, went up to him, shook his hand, thanked him for his service. And I'm standing up there and the guy's name's Cody. Cody turns around. He's like, hey, Mike, where did you go through boot? And I looked at him. I was like, the right one.
Well, it depends on how you look at the map. But either you're on the right.
It's technically
turn the map around, and then I was on the right.
you guys have done a lot of cool ass shit. I know you've had people reach out to you. Any kind of like cool experiences, random places that you might have gone and visited or linked up with people who've reached out to you?
Yeah, you've met. You recently met Nathan. Yeah, from Washington, Missouri. I still don't know how I hooked up with him, but you know, he's one of those guys that just kind of reached out, and young man, he's what, 38, 39. And
yeah,
he just said, my dream is to be a curator of a World War II museum. And off he went. And, it opened up not too long ago. Robert went to the grand opening, and unfortunately I was here in Australia doing the movie, and that's pretty odd and strange that you grew up around there, didn't you?
Yeah. So him and I decided that we're like 3 years difference in age.
Oh yeah.
And we actually know a lot of the same people. Like once we got to talking,
he's probably arrested the people, you know.
Probably. yeah, small world for sure.
He has a friend that's his name's Michael. He's a detective, and he was in the 3rd Marines.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a good dude. A lot of Marines around there. I had a good time when I was there. And it was kind of Peter Youngblood played Shifty. That's how it was. Shifty played Shifty Powers. He got a hold of they were doing an event for the American Legion, 100 years.
100 years.
And then Nathan just sent me a message, and I said, sure, let's do it. He was like, what the fuck? That's cool.
like, you know what's crazy? So I went in 03, and I was close to a lot of Marines. The guy who lived diagonal from me, he was a Vietnam Marine vet. Like, fucking love this guy to death, you know? And he's got a picture. He's got an amazing office, right? His just Marine Corps shit everywhere. It's fucking amazing. He's got his boot camp pick, black and white, just looking like death itself, right? Like he is just a mean motherfucker. He's got my boot pick. And then his sons, one went officer Army and one went Navy. And of course he's got them down below ours. Like I get to be next to him because I'm a Marine. So he had a huge impact and influence in my life, you know, because he was just an awesome guy. And I'm like, you know, that's who I want to be when I get older. I want to be that guy right there. I had another guy who he was recon like in the 80s. So his son went in and got killed in Fallujah in June of 2006. And then there was just this mass influence of people signing up for the Marine Corps right around 2006, like dudes my age that didn't go in until, you know, 3 or 4 years later. So there are a shit ton of Marines from that Eureka, Washington, that little area right there. And it's actually. So again, if Garcia, you said that you drove past like through my hometown. Yeah. So then you went through a stretch of highway that was named after Riley Baker. And that was my buddy who I grew up with, who got killed over. It wasn't Fallujah, my bad. It was Ramadi in 2006. Okay.
The cemetery?
Well, it was a stretch of highway between the Six Flags and the Washington where you went out to. So
okay.
But yeah,
saying in Ramadi, it wasn't the cemetery, was it?
Oh, where he got killed?
Yeah.
No, they were. So he was with Scout Snipers. They were on a rooftop doing Overwatch.
Okay.
And after a couple days went by, they dropped off like a bag of mortar IED rounds by the door.
Okay.
And then, you know, started popping some shots off. Because again, right, they might be running around in fucking pajamas, fucking goats on Thursday, but they're smart because they knew what they would do. They knew if you pop shots at them, they're going to QRF and get out of there. And that's what happened. And he was he always led the way. He was always the first one. He was the first one out the door. And, you know, that was that. So
dang.
It was war. We all know, man, it's fucking hell. It is what it is, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I think, I know we ended up doing a series year back before we did the Pacific. I think it was it was on the History Channel called the Combat Zone. And we ended up doing a bunch of spots on that one, like that covered different theaters of war for different branches and stuff like that. So I think one of the ones that we did, Brady Joe was like advising the cemetery one, the one in Iraq.
That was in Fallujah, though, I think.
Was it Fallujah?
Yeah, Sergeant Martinez.
I believe so.
Yeah, I think everything is cloudy. But I don't know. But
you guys,
that was a good series because what it was is famous photos of history.
Yeah.
So like that when the Marines they were on the Kelly boats and they were just fixing to hit the beach in Korea. We redid that that picture, and then what it does is that picture would go from the picture and mold into the real people. It was amazing. It was really good. It ended up, by the time we were done, it was the high, they were spending more money than they had ever spent before, because I was bringing the like legit dudes. We did one on in Desert Storm, but the
Desert Storm,
We
did Vietnam,
couple we Vietnam did Storm, ones, yeah. Did a Iraq one. We did a bunch of them, man. Yeah. And they would show me the picture, and I would cast like almost always cast the Marines though to play the parts, and then we'd come in and redo the whole fucking thing. And it was good. It was their highest grossing series they ever did.
Were you guys involved at all in the Men Who Built America or some shit like that?
No, but I love those shows.
So the first sergeant who was on there talking, First Sergeant Baudette, he was Kilo Company 3-6 Gunny whenever we went over to Iraq together. Mm. He was a pretty good dude. Yeah, it's one of those weirdest fuck things, right? Like it's almost like the scene from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood with Leo, when you're just sitting there and then you're like, oh.
Hey, you old man, like who, where?
Yeah. But guys, I know that Freddie Joe, you got to get ready to get out of here, right?
Yeah, my car picks me up in 20 minutes, so I got to get going. Okay.
Hey, look, awesome. I'll let you guys know. The three of you right here right now, and as well as anybody listening, I will be hazing myself until you guys are tired for missing the year of the Marine Corps birthday. I'll push until you guys are tired.
No, you're the first one is a pass because everybody's getting old. So
that's right, it, baby. It was just my birthday, so I'm kind of like, you know, okay. Yeah.
Right. I'm glad you said every movie I get that, you know, oh, should I just drop and do 20? I said, no, just push until I get sick of watching.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Push and give me 20. What the fuck's what's that?
Yeah. You know? That's an old army thing, I guess.
Yeah, let me give you a card.
Here's the greatest fucking thing ever. Boot camp. There was this kid named Amos, and I'll never forget him. I'll probably be fucking demented somewhere, 90 years old, maybe. I'll still remember this kid. So he was up on the quarter deck and fucking mountain climbing. All of a sudden, dude just stops. Stands up, boom, position of attention. So the drill instruct him, right? Like come in like, what the fuck? And he's like, sir, this recruit has reached the top of the mountain, sir.
That's pretty smart.
Greatest fucking thing I've ever seen in boot camp.
Pretty smart. Yeah. I would thrash him for a little bit and let him off because I couldn't stop laughing.
Like, all right, go back down.
Right.
Yeah, they're using their brain.
Go back down. Right, exactly. Guys, this is awesome, man. This is awesome. We'll have to do it again.
Yep, thank you, guys.
Thank you guys. We'll keep in touch and see what happens in October, if anything happens down here in Florida. And
yeah, man.
Until then, we'll just keep in touch.
You got it.
All right, guys. Thanks again so much for being on. Everybody, thanks again for listening and supporting the Tales for the Core. And until next time, Simplify. We'll be right back.